welcome to the latest Care Home Management Magazine podcast. This time it's a legal special. My name's Steve Hemsley. I'm the publishing editor of Care Home Management Magazine. And this podcast is sponsored, as always, by Care Home Marketing Experts Smooth Digital, helping fill care and nursing home beds with private paying residents. I'm joined by two lawyers today who specialise in social care and health, and they're here to discuss some key legal issues that will affect care providers as we move into 2021. Delighted to welcome Jill Mason, who's partner and head of health and care at Mills and Reeve, and Sue Ann Griffiths, who's a partner at Bevan Britain. Thank you both for taking part in the podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time today. Before we start, it's always nice to find out a bit about yourself, a bit about your law firm. So if you could just spend 30 seconds or so giving us a bit of an introduction, that'd be fantastic. Let's start with you, Jill, from Mills and Reeve.
Absolutely. Good morning, everybody. Absolutely delighted to be here representing Mills and Reeve. My personal practice relates to healthcare law. So that's everything to do with those that you care for. And it can range from everything from Mental Capacity Act issues, inquests, information governance, and all things patients and family related. And then Mills and Reeve as a whole is a full service commercial law firm, but we have a specialist sector expertise in health and care and do a lot of work for care home providers, operators and investors.
Thank you very much, Jill. And Sue Ann from Bevan Britain.
Hi, Steve. Lovely to be here. Thank you very much. So, yes, I'm from Bevan Britain. Bevan Britain is a health and social care law firm, essentially, that provides advice to independent health and social care advisor, providers and NHS trusts. And my particular area is CQC regulation. So I sit in the health, care and regulatory team at Bevan Britain and provide advice on all sorts of issues around regulatory, but then the wider team deal with all other issues such as mental capacity, Mental Health Act issues, and all of the sort of wider health and social care issues that arise. But we're also a full service law firm as well.
Thank you both very much. And I do know from having done a few of these legal special podcasts, they do tend to be among the most popular and most listened to podcasts from by the listeners and readers of Care Home Management. So thank you. Let's start, Jill, with you and your topics. You wanted to talk about some of the reports that have come out recently looking at social care, health and health, and what the implications might be for care home providers. Obviously, CQC reports, other reports from local government, etc. What are these reports telling us, and what can care home providers learn from them?
Right. Well, thanks for that, Steve. Yes, I do feel somewhat sorry for our clients in the current climate, because there's a deluge of reports coming out left, right and centre, and trying to keep on top of those whilst dealing with the pandemic, I imagine, is a well nigh impossible task. So that's why I thought it might be helpful for me to pick out a few key points from them for readers. And the first report I wanted to mention was CQC's State of Care report. So as people will know, this is their annual assessment of health and adult social care. And it's generated by them going out to inspect over 30,000 services and providers. And there were some fabulous positive points in it, which I think is always important for people to take on board, despite the fact it's coming from their regulator. So it starts talking about the professionalism and the dedication of people who have worked and volunteered in the health and care sector. And they say, whilst that's always been the system's key strength, from March onwards, obviously that's never been more obvious. And they have some fantastic case studies in there as well. And one that particularly caught our eye was called Pimp My Zimmer, but that's not desperately legal. So moving on. Yeah. Some of the key points relating to social care included the fact that they thought the pandemic had highlighted what they talk about is the unstructured relationship between government and a sector comprised of this collection of over 25,000 businesses. And they think that COVID-19 has reinforced the need for more clearly defined expectations on both sides, with more extensive oversight and a greater understanding of the financial performance of these businesses in order to target support. And I think that will flow in quite nicely with what Suyang wants to talk about later today. The report also has some interesting statistics in it. 3% of care homes have never been rated better than requires improvements, and that equates to about 512 homes. On the plus side, about 80% of adult social care services have been rated as good and 5% as outstanding. So that's a helpful message there. But interestingly, they haven't seen any clear relationship between care home ratings and the number of deaths due to COVID in those homes. So that's just a quick overview, but I wanted to get down into more of the legals and the nitty-gritty of that report, and looking at the dreaded topic of deprivation of liberty safeguards, or DOLs. And CQC made five observations in their report about DOLs. Firstly, despite the legislation having been in place for years, there's still huge variation in the understanding and the practice relating to DOLs, and indeed in the quality of training. And CQC are concerned that providers don't understand what a good quality mental capacity assessment and a good quality best interest decision looks like. They highlight some good quality training and explain that that is characterised by a focus on real life and lots of practice-based examples rather than more generic learning modules. They have been concerned, as have the courts, about a sharp fall in the number of notifications in the period March to May. They looked back and compared it with March to May 2019 and saw that notifications from adult social care services dropped by almost a third. So that was a concern. But their main point is that given that a DOLS authorisation can last for up to a year, it might not be until March 2023 that DOLS is fully behind us. So to them, that underlines the importance of continuing to improve the way that providers, local authorities and others all work together to support A, the proper use of DOLS, but also B, to give careful consideration to how DOLS and the new Liberty Protection Safeguards, or LPS, will work alongside each other in the first year of implementing LPS. So they want the time ahead to be used to consider what can be done with the current system to ease the transition. Now, speaking of LPS, people might be aware that in light of the Mental Capacity Amendment Act, we're expecting a 12-week consultation on draft regulations and a draft code of practice in the spring. And people will be delighted to know there'll be six sets of regulations that they can comment on, as well as a brand new merged code of practice that's going to cover the whole of the Mental Capacity Act and Liberty Protection Safeguards in one code. So that's something to look out for early next year. But good news for today is that the role of the care home manager in LPS is not going to be implemented. So people might know that that was originally designed so that those who knew the person, who understood their wishes and feelings, could actually lead the LPS process and thereby reduce the burden on local authorities and CCGs. But it's been decided that now is not the right time, funnily enough, to introduce this, but that is going to be kept under review.
So, Jill, you talk a lot there about unstructured. I mean, it's half the problem here, the lack of collaboration. And from a legal point of view, do you think care homes would benefit if there was more working together?
I think, yes, in terms of understanding, because the responsible body that will be approving these Liberty Protection Safeguards and who currently have to look after the DOLS is the local authority, and they're often under considerable resourcing pressure. So it's a matter of keeping an open conversation going between you and your local authority to make sure that you're not unlawfully depriving someone of their liberty.
Yes, and before we go on to talk about the other reports, just wanted to bring in Suyang. I mean, Suyang, listening to that, this the report about the future of care, etc., and being a CQC expert, can you relate to what Jill's saying there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are definitely, when I'll be talking a little bit about the strategy moving forward that CQC is thinking about. And it's clear from the state of care report that some of the themes in there that they're certainly taking forward. And I think Jill raised there that 3% issue where providers are simply stuck in sort of a requires improvement rating. And that's been a considerable concern to CQC over recent years, and thinking, well, things aren't getting worse from last year. That's what the state report's saying, but actually they're not getting better. So there's really a need to drive up improvement. So I think that's where they're heading in the strategy.
Yes. And Jill, back to you and the other reports you wanted to talk about. I mean, we are looking at unstructured side of things here. I mean, do these reports all pull things together? I mean, are they all singing from the same hymn sheet?
Well, I think the bottom line for all of the reports is all about improving quality of care. I mean, obviously, that must be everybody's focus. So the next one I wanted to talk about was the Local Government and Social Care Ombudsman, Michael King. He's recently produced his annual review of adult social care complaints. And he, despite the fact we're in a pandemic, doesn't want people to lose sight of the value of effective complaints mechanisms at this time. And he's raised this point because he's actually concerned that over the past 3 years, the number of care complaints received has been static. And what that's saying to him is that maybe opportunities are being missed in terms of A, redressing issues with care users, but B, learning and improvement opportunities for care services. And we do a lot of work with clients around risk management, risk identification, risk ownership. And I think, you know, unfortunately, things often do go wrong with care. But what the very important thing is to do is to learn and to circulate to others about the lessons that you've learned in order to improve the care given. But why I particularly wanted to flag this was that he is calling for a statutory requirement to be placed on care providers to actually signpost people to the local complaints process and or their right to seek the Ombudsman's independent review. So he's currently worried that there's greater burdens are being placed on the more conscientious providers, and that's allowing weaker operators to avoid public accountability. And again, some statistics from him, they found fault in 69% of care complaints that they investigated, which seems quite a high figure. And those included issues around safeguarding, assessment and care planning and charging for care. So his report has a list of questions that you can sort of health check your organisation's approach to complaints. So that's another something to do for care home owners and operators. Then the final report that I wanted to mention is sort of slightly different and left field, but actually not, because it echoes some comments from the CQC State of Care report. And that's a report prepared by an organisation called Public Policy Projects, which is a kind of think tank chaired by Stephen Dorrell, the former Secretary of State for Health. And their recent report was called The Acceleration of Digital Healthcare. And that's something that's really just, I mean, I think abundantly clear to all of us, the way digital has hugely shot up the agenda. And I can see in care home management that Bethan was writing this week about new national standards too around integration of health and social care information. And this report, it notes that 60% of social care providers are single institutions who may therefore be struggling to navigate all the procurement procedures involved in digital healthcare. So what they suggest is that both local authorities and the new integrated care systems should really be helping social care providers to procure digital solutions. And some of the recommendations focused on social care include providers of health and care not being registered by CQC unless they can achieve a minimum digital functionality. And in that regard, the next recommendation is that it should be NHSX that is responsible for setting out that minimum digital functionality as soon as possible, with that all being overseen by NHSX, but ideally via CQC. And then the final recommendation in this report relates to these new integrated care systems. And it is thought that they should be given A, legal authority, and B, responsibility, therefore, for driving integration via digital investment. a PPP thing. This therefore means a minimum of £10 million per integrated care system to fund integrated projects between the NHS and social care and other bodies. So that's, you know, a positive. That's a lot of money, but it's yet another thing for care homes to be grappling with at this moment in time. So those were the reports I thought were particularly pertinent in the current climate, Steve.
Thank you, Jill. Just going back to the local government reports and the you were talking about the complaints side of things. What sort of advice are you giving care home providers at the moment around, you know, something that might happen, might become statutory, and are they viewing complaints in the right way, you know, as a worry, or should they be looking at it as a really good way to learn and improve their ranking, etc.?
Well, I think the important thing to think about is complaints. Often people can think, oh no, this is such a heart sink moment, we've got to deal with this, this is going to take a lot of time. But if you invest the time and deal with the complaint as well as you can, then that may often prevent a claim coming further down the line, which obviously would involve an awful lot more time and stress for those working in the care home. So that's the first thing. And secondly, yes, I mean, the sort of the golden threads that run through these complaints, you know, you can learn so much from them, and then that will improve the quality of care, which would take us back round to the ratings improvements as well. So it's all quite circular.
And just before I go to Sue-Anne on that, you touched on digital too. Now, digital transformation, obviously a massive area for care homes. They are thinking about it. They're having to do it. They know it's important to invest in digital. Do you think that is one of the answers really to being compliant, being aware of what's happening legally, and you know, having less of an unstructured approach? I mean, it is the future, isn't it? That if you are digital, you can solve a lot of these problems.
Well, I think it can give, you know, it can give oversight, it can give easy access. If records are all electronic, then people don't have an issue of trying to work out who entered, made the entry, or what it said. And, you know, lawyers just love everything in triplicate, and everything is clear. You know, they think everything's black and white. So anything that can help in an evidential process and that can be readily shared, for example, with families or with CQC, must help the overall relationships there.
And Sue-Anne, picking up on that, and that public policy projects accelerating digital healthcare report, do you think the CQC will start to put more pressure on care homes, expect care homes to have a minimum digital solution, whatever that is?
I think it's inevitable in the future. I think CQC are certainly moving in that direction. They themselves are talking about their new way of inspection, which I'll speak a little bit about in a bit. But what they're talking about there is very much inspection, sort of the physical inspection, not just being the prime tool that they use to assess an organisation, that actually they're going to be collecting lots of data. So organisations will need to be much better at providing information to CQC. And if that can be done digitally, then, you know, that's going to be far better and far easier for everybody to look at. But yeah, I think it's inevitable, and I think it's very interesting, this sort of concept of a minimum digital functionality sort of standard, so that even entering the market moving forward, unless, you know, you've put your money towards some of this, putting good infrastructure, digital infrastructure in place, then you're simply not going to get registered. You know, that they're clearly thinking along the lines that it's the way that quality is going to be driven up by embracing more of this technology.
And Jill, does it say what you know, a minimum digital solution offer by a care home would look like?
I think that's for NHSX with all their digital firepower to set out.
Right. And I was just finally going to ask you, Jill, before we go to Sue-Anne, all these reports, a lot of them were written and put together during or before COVID. Now we're coming out of the pandemic, fingers crossed. Are the findings and what they say as relevant now, or have they been, or do they need to be refined?
Yes, yeah, certainly the CQC State of Care report was looking at ratings as at 31st of March, and comparing back to the previous 31st July 2019. But I don't think that detracts from anything that's in these reports. If anything, it probably heightens the importance of you know, getting on and, A, for example, dealing with complaints in as much detail as possible, as promptly as possible, getting the technology right. I think those are just heightened as opposed to something that we can ignore because the reports were pre-COVID.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, Johnny, how's it going?
Richard, not the best. I'm still struggling to fill the empty beds in the home.
Oh, no. Have you given the guys at Smooth Digital a call?
No. Could they help?
Sure. They help care home owners like you and me fill our beds with private paying residents. They can market you online on Google and Facebook.
Oh, yeah? I better give them a call.
You'll be crazy not to, Johnny. I've built up a waiting list working with Smooth Digital. Just go on Google and search Smooth Digital.
S-M-O-O-T-H.
100% Smooth Digital.
You're a lifesaver.
For all the latest care home news, visit chmonline.co.uk.
And welcome back to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast, a legal special today. My name's Steve Hemsley, the publishing editor. And this podcast, as always, is sponsored by Smooth Digital, helping fill care and nursing home beds with private paying residents. Just to remind you who's on our panel today, we've got two excellent health and social care lawyers with us, Jill Mason, partner and head of health and care at Mills and Reeve, and Sue-Anne Griffiths, who's partner for Bevan Britain. Now, Sue-Anne, you're going to talk to us about the CQC and the future landscape, the direction of the CQC in 2021. Very interesting and important for care homes to know what's going to happen, how it's going to affect their inspections. They haven't been face-to-face ones for a while during COVID. There was the framework, which seems to have been accepted as quite a good and gone okay. But the CQC has some sort of big plans, doesn't it, for the next year or so, and what it wants to do, its direction of travel. What should care homes be looking out for?
Essentially, CQC are in the process of sorting out and putting in place a new strategy that should kick off in May 2021. So one thing sort of for providers to be thinking about is that the consultation will take place at the end of this year and early next. And so it'll be an opportunity for providers to feed into that consultation. But they've been thinking about their new strategy for a while now and sort of moving through different phases of it. And I think, you know, there is a need for a new strategy because the last strategy was set in 2016 and the world has changed quite significantly since then. You know, we've already talked about sort of innovation, the different types of model of care, and the current registration and inspection regime doesn't always fit very neatly into these sort of innovative models. And currently CQC's sort of model really looks, it's sort of inspecting, you know, the one provider model, a single provider model, rather than, you know, the landscape at the moment is about integration of health and social care. So they're very much looking at that. So, you know, the current direction of travel in terms of their own thinking is along four themes. And Ian Trehome, the chief executive of CQC, has already said, as have many others within CQC, that actually, you know, the inspection of old has just gone. That's not coming back in sort of how we were being inspected earlier this year and last year. You know, COVID has moved things forward quite quickly, but the direction of travel is moving away from sort of a set, you know, inspection timetable and, you know, getting an inspection once every year or every 2 years, depending on the sort of rating you've got, and then that being it. Actually, CQC are going to be much more fluid moving forward. So they're sort of talking around four themes at the moment. The first one being all about people, ensuring that the voice of the service user is really driving, you know, how regulation should look. Because, and we've already talked about, you know, sort of complaints and the importance of dealing with complaints. And CQC want to use more information. They want people to tell them what services are like. They want relatives and staff to be providing more information on and being listened to so that services can get improved and work towards better services. So, you know, over recent years with CQC, the voice of the patient in terms of how organisations are dealing with complaints, etc., has become more important in inspections and inspection reports. But, you know, they're really upping the ante now, and they're going to make sure that, you know, the public at large understand what CQC's function is so that people feel empowered to tell them what they're finding in these services and what's concerning to them. And actually quite interesting, CQC are saying unless they're seeing good examples of this being implemented within organisations, then you're not going to get a good or an outstanding rating. So it could really limit your rating. The next theme that they're talking about is being much smarter in the way they regulate. They want to target their resources to have the greatest impact. And so this is about them collating a lot of data from lots of different sources, be it from staff, from, you know, service users, from accreditations, from, you know, national databases, whatever it is. But essentially making the point that the physical inspection itself is just going to be one of the tools that they're going to use, because they want to be assessing risk. They're saying, you know, an inspection currently, or how it used to be done, is a point in time over 1 or 2 days and then you're rated. But actually, is that what this organization looks like all of the other days when, you know, there's no inspection? So they want to be much more fluid, and what that will mean is that the rating will get changed far more fluidly, far more frequently than it currently is. We don't quite know how that's going to work, but I think it's just a really interesting direction of travel. The third theme is all around safety, which is unsurprising. We've already spoken this morning about the state of care report, where, you know, CQC are saying that safe rating, it's not got worse for organisations, but it's not getting better. So they really want to drive the safety agenda up, and they want to look at, well, what does safe look like? And can we have a consistent message, you know, across all different sectors, but also with strategic partners, so that providers understand what the expectation is much more. And the indication from CQC is, you know, they really want to see better safety cultures within organisations. They want it to be the norm that staff are speaking up and they're not concerned, you know, about the implications of speaking up. They want to see organisations that are learning consistently when things are going wrong, so that they're driving up the safe agenda. And CQC are saying, you know, unless they see that in organisations, then they're going to be much tougher on them on that issue. And so I think that's an important area to look out for. And then just final theme that they're talking about, and again, unsurprisingly, but it's all about improvement and ensuring that organisations are moving forward, are being helped as well to improve. And this is quite an interesting area, because one of the bugbears of providers over time, and I'm sure Jill will agree with me with this, that what they say is, well, you know, we ask inspectors to help us with understanding what's required, because we don't always understand. And maybe the inspector will say, well, you know, it's not our role to tell you how to improve. We're here to inspect, and, you know, you need to go and get help from somewhere else. And there's always been a bit of that tension. And I think there's been a recognition this year, more than any, that actually CQC might have a more reciprocal role in the relationship than they've traditionally thought that they've had. I mean, the ESF, so the emergency framework that was put in place during COVID, is quite interesting, because physical inspections stopped at the beginning of COVID. This new framework came in, which was essentially inspectors having chats with providers to understand, or to ensure that they were supported through COVID, that they had help, and the inspectors were trying to facilitate, you know, PPE for them and helping them with infection control measures. And I think a lot of providers welcome that sort of cooperation. And I think there's an understanding now by CQC that perhaps they do have some role in improve or helping to improve. But I think it'll be interesting because it's unclear what sort of model they're going to go down, whether they're going to have this talk and in some regards about perhaps they'll have a sort of CQC improvement arm, or maybe they'll form an alliance with other sort of strategic partners to help organizations, or maybe they'll just do some road shows on certain sort of themes. But it's quite interesting, and you know, how that will pan out. But it's definitely a shift in their way of thinking.
Yes, it's really interesting, isn't it? And I know that Ian Trenholm did give a big speech, didn't he, in August, where he tried to outline this whole new approach, innovation and inspiration, and trying to be more flexible and agile as an organisation and work smarter. Do you think care homes understand what's going on here in terms of how it will benefit them? Are they coming to you, companies like yourselves, and asking for advice on what this might mean, you know, this improvement, this partnership, working smarter? Has the relationship changed, I suppose, maybe even during the sort of COVID situation? Will care homes welcome what's going on?
Yes, I mean, I think it will be welcomed in general terms. I mean, one of the problems for some providers at the moment is that they're stuck on a particular rating for a long time. So one of the key concerns this year is that some providers are on requires improvement rating, for example. But they're not seen as a huge risk to CQC at the moment, because they've maybe been sending in information to CQC so that CQC is aware that actually they're not huge risk. So it's not a priority for CQC to go and inspect them again and re-rate them. But unfortunately, some of these organizations are stuck on a rating and feel that, you know, they should get a better rating. So I think it will be welcome that organizations will have the opportunity to change their ratings to a better rating, but obviously it goes the other way and it could go down as well. I think what's not clear at the moment, as you listeners will probably know, currently the system is if you've got your draft report and your rating, then you can access the actual accuracy process to challenge the accuracy of some parts of that that report if you'd be unhappy with it and the underlying rating. Now, there's no suggestion that that won't be a process moving forward, but it's unclear how that's going to work if you've got a far better or a far more fluid system in terms of the rating being changed. So yes, I mean, I think providers will need to be aware, you know, when the rating changes, if they're not happy with it, then there should be a way of challenging. And yes, that's how we would be helping providers and talk them through the process, or, you know, how they can try and impact that change of rating.
And you mentioned the consultation, asking for sort of feedback from care homes. Are you advising clients on what they could be consulted on and what they might want to put forward?
Well, I think it's a really important opportunity, actually, for providers. It's important once the consultation comes out and we know what the actual strategy is going to really look like. It's an opportunity for providers, either in their networks or individually as organisations, to feed into that. And, you know, it doesn't have to be reams and reams of writing back to CQC, but just putting forward your view, because those views will get considered. And it's an opportunity for providers to shape the future a little bit, to ensure, you know, that it is fit for purpose in terms of the regulatory system that's going to be put in place. So yes, I mean, in terms of our role, we are there to help providers sort of understand what the consultation means and sort of try and help interpret what the strategy could mean for them moving forward as organisations, and helping them then put forward some submissions to CQC for consideration.
And Jill, I mean, to pick up on what Sue-Ann was saying there, I mean, this is a chance, isn't it, to reshape the future. And Ian Trenholm's quite ambitious plans there to make everything really sort of change the direction and sort of really raise the profile of CQC in the eyes of users of care and care providers. With your lawyer's hat on, do you think clients will be understanding what's going on here and will need a bit of advice?
Absolutely. I mean, with regard to the consultation, I would encourage everybody to contribute to that. As in all things relating to health and care, no matter what it is, communication is absolutely key. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's all about having that conversation with CQC. And I think certainly recently there's been a lot more coming out from them. So, for example, in the summer, care home professionals picked up about you know, the CQC's document on what a good inspection looks and feels like. And that's, I think that's a really encouraging start as well. And that document's trying to address misunderstandings and setting out expectations. So I think if everybody's clear from the outset what is being asked of them and what they need to do, then that just helps everybody.
Yes. And with the framework that has gone on, I mean, how has that had an impact on the relationship, do you think, Jill, between care providers and the CQC? There haven't been these sort of physical inspections. Maybe some care homes have found it difficult to challenge or raise concerns about their inspection, about the comments that have been made about their ratings. Do you think not having in-person inspections has damaged the relationship, or have care homes and the CQC made the best of what's obviously a very difficult situation?
Well, I think there has been, you know, a reluctance to do things remotely when actually with digital transformation, that should be exactly the way we're going. So it's unfortunate in one respect the pandemic has prevented that. But I think they too need to look at the digital landscape and think how they can improve things. As Suanne was saying as well, you know, applying a risk judgment and looking at, you know, who they need to speak to. And how regularly they need to speak to them.
Yes, and Suanne, I mean, I'll get your thoughts on the framework, but you also mentioned about data, which is very interesting. I do think, obviously, from the CQC's perspective, it's important, isn't it, that care homes do go digital so that they do provide and generate the data that the CQC can use ultimately to connect all the dots and achieve what it wants to achieve.
Yes, absolutely. I think it all ties in very well. CQC themselves have said that they've sort of improved their digital infrastructure quite significantly so that they can analyse this sort of data. But inevitably, it will be really important for providers moving forward to be giving CQC good up-to-date data, it being easy to understand and covering a lot of the different CLOEs, and having that data to hand and being able to provide it regularly to CQC is going to be important, particularly if you want to impact that rating. And I would imagine that a provider that's sort of not being able to provide information regularly to CQC in a format that is understandable, is logical and is professional looking, could impact CQC's view of a particular provider. So I think moving forward, being more professional in a digital way is the inevitable direction of travel and expectation of CQC.
You're listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast with Steve Hemsley.
And I just wanted to ask you both one final question, and not to put you on the spot, but just looking back at 2020 and what sort of year it's been as sort of legal professionals working in this space. Care homes have been in the news since the beginning of the pandemic, since March, good and bad, and it's been very, very difficult. I just wondered whether you guys have known anything like it. I'll start with you, Jill. I'm not sure how long you've worked in the sector offering advice, but where does 2020 sit really? And do you expect things to return to some sort of normality in 2021?
Well, it has been a bizarre year. In one respect, we're very conscious that our clients have, you know, been right at the coalface, have had absolutely testing and trying situations to deal with. And whilst we're trying to keep in touch with them and provide support, often they just need to get on and do things. But in the other breath, we're seeing a lot of really urgent instructions coming in on CQC, particularly related issues, where despite the fact that clients are grappling with a pandemic, they're still dealing with difficult draft reports, as Suanne said, and having to worry about their registration.
And Suanne, what about you? I mean, have care homes been asking you for different things? Has it been a very, very different year than in previous times? And do you think things might return to normal?
As Jill says, it's been a very bizarre year. I think what I've noticed is providers are coming for, you know, advice more frequently, particularly at some stage around, you know, when there was multiple versions of guidance coming out, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic, which was quite frankly so confusing for us as lawyers, not being used to having that many changes in guidance in sort of 1 week. So I can't imagine what it was like for providers. And the other thing that I found quite interesting this year is I think care providers have sort of come together a little bit more and formed lots of networks to support themselves. And we've been involved in helping, you know, perhaps sitting on some webinars to help give some advice around some of the legal issues. But I think that's been really interesting, sort of much more networks and sharing of information, which I think providers have found really helpful to be working with other organisations and sharing information. And certainly it's helped me as well as a lawyer in the sector to really understand the issues when I'm hearing all these discussions in these networks of, you know, what it's really like, you know, at the coalface and trying to put all of these changes and all this guidance in place. So yeah, it's been an interesting year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a very, very interesting year. And it's great to hear people have been coming together. We have heard those stories through Care Home Management. Thank you both. We're out of time now. So yeah, thank you very much to my panel, Jill Mason, partner and head of health and care at Mills and Reeves, and Suanne Griffiths, a partner for Bevan Britain. You've been listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast, Legal Special, with me, Steve Hemsley, and sponsored by Smooth Digital, helping fill care and nursing home beds with private paying residents. We'll be back with more podcasts over the next few weeks, so we hope you'll enjoy those too. And in the meantime, please stay safe, and we'll see you soon. We'll be right back.